Welcome back to Hard Labor and Money Splashes,
a podcast about the Rolling Stones.
We're your hosts, Craig and John.
We're going to discuss She Was Hot.
Yeah, the second single, found something in Musician magazine. There was a discussion with Mick and Keith at that, and this might have been theater for the person interviewing them, but and that person even calls that out. That said that they were debating which single to put out first. There was some record company pushback, I guess, according to this, against Undercover. Maybe it was the political content or something. And Keith references, I think, Robert Plant. And so it's like, you know, well, he had this problem. You know, he was like, they wanted to put out a certain single and whatever. And then the album was doing well and the single wasn't doing well. And, you know, he's like, it's not going to bother me if we put this out first and save Undercover for the night later. And he goes on to talk about how he likes to keep things unpredictable. He's like, well, I don't mind having a 5-minute intro. I don't mind knocking out a verse. You know, Mick might get upset if I knock out a verse, there goes a lot of his work or something.
But you know, that's very blues tradition. You know, like John Lee Hooker, you know, you're never sure how many bars anything is going to be at any given time. Or maybe we're not going to go to the next chord. We're fine in this chord, you know.
Yeah, we don't have to change up. But yeah, this ends up being the second single. There's another great video for this one that we can talk about when we get there.
This is just such a fun rock and roll song. And as we keep talking about the experimental nature of this album and everything. But this is right. This is just a, you know, kind of a home run rock and roll. This is what you want from the Rolling Stones.
This is one that, let's say you purchased this album in 1983 thinking, okay, I'm going to get this experimental album they're talking about. The first track is, we've talked about that, is, I don't know that it's really that different. It's not experimental.
It's dark and strange.
It's dark and strange, but
it's not Start Me Up.
But it's also not some sort of experimental avant-garde. It's not Yoko Ono screaming or, you know, just chimes or something. But if you weren't sure, and then you got to the second song, I think now you're probably back on board, because this is very, to me, this would be right at home. If you mix this slightly different, you could easily have this on Goat's Head Soup. Mm. Or It's Only Rock and Roll. I think it's very similar to those two albums in spirit.
I think this is like an evolution of a straight up Chuck Berry, you know, rock
definitely,
and roll
yeah.
happening. And I want to just point out, this is Stu probably makes this a great rock and roll song, his boogieing on here. Chuck Lavelle, I have to throw a little shade on him in this instance. If we're saying one of the themes of this album is Mick trying to be very au courant, very like, this is what everyone's doing in 1983, we need to be a part of that or be on top of that or whatever. And a lot of Lavelle's things are adding like weird little synth things, you know, kind of like, I don't know, I'm not calling it out necessarily, but when you hear that DX7 or something that just says, oh, it's the 80s. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, actually, you see that it was actually very detrimental because it really dates the sound.
Yeah.
As soon as he comes in with this stuff, you're like, oh. Mm.
I think that's always one of Keith's criticisms when he's trying to not get them to go down these paths. And says, well, it's going to be very dated if we do that. But they did go down those paths in the late 60s with certain things. And even in the early 70s with the clavinet that Billy Preston started played on some of the songs on Goat's Head Soup. I mean, that's a very 70s blaxploitation film feel.
I feel like that 70s-ism is always welcome, and maybe the 80s is more divisive. I don't know what we're about that. But
that's true.
Once again, we've got a video that's too scandalous for MTV. Who knew that they were so stodgy?
I mean, this is early 84, I believe, if I'm correct. So we probably haven't seen real scandalous stuff on MTV yet from, say, Prince, mm-hmm. Madonna. I mean, that's yet to come, but it's going to come soon. But they're not quite there yet. And they probably, the big MTV acts of the time, Duran Duran, maybe?
They're getting there.
Yeah. So it wasn't as scandalous. In playing tribute to the song style, being Chuck Berry, in the video they're in these 1950s style matching checkered sport coats like Chuck Berry would wear. The actress in the video, and this is sort of like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but she is one of the stars in Ruthless People.
Oh, wow.
I think 2 years later, which Mick does the solo, mm-hmm. as a solo artist, does the theme song for. I don't know how much connection she had to them outside of that, but maybe that's how he ended up doing that. I'm not sure.
That would be an interesting chain, you know, how that gets there. So supposedly there's a scene where towards the end of the video, maybe fire is shooting out of this woman's bottom and the buttons on some guy's trousers pop off. And the buttons popping off the trousers were considered you know, that was the offending thing. That was too, oh, that's just too much. Again, it's puzzling today to think of.
And I think, you know, the Mandela effect or whatever, I always thought that guy was Bill Wyman in the video. And
well, I hope it was.
I don't think it is, but I always thought that was him. And because Charlie Watts is in the video at the end as the woman's talent manager or something. And he shows like a picture of her and it has her measurements. And then there's all these telephones ringing and he's trying to answer them all at once. Yeah.
And Woody does like a great rock and roll Shemp, basically, impression in this video too, with his weird rubber neck guitar and all of that. It's the whole thing is just, it's a lot of fun. We're going back from something scary to pink suits and frivolity and that kind of thing. This is the second single. The B-side, which I, you know, had passed me by until recently, I Think I'm Going Mad.
Yeah, this is one that had shown up on some bootleg things and some outtake playlists on YouTube over time. And I don't remember exactly when I first heard it. This is a kind of a mid-tempo ballad. It's not maybe slow as say, an Angie. It's a little bit more upbeat.
It seems like a weird, almost like a country, heavily flanged song that is reminiscent a little of You Can't Always Get What You Want. It's a cool track.
I don't know who's doing the sax. I assume Bobby Keys, but David Sanborn was doing a lot of sax on this record. I don't know if this might be something that they had worked on before, like an outtake pre-Undercover. I think this could have been, with a little tightening, this might have had some chart success at the time, if this had been a single.
It's certainly as good as a lot of things.
Yeah. This would have been the only real, I think, ballad on the album. There really isn't any. I mean, when you think about it, they kind of skipped that this time out. Maybe because, well, the last album is Tattoo You, and it has a whole side of what you would call ballads, I guess, slower songs and things. But there really isn't like a traditional ballad on this, but this could have been. And yeah, I think this could have seen some chart success. I mean, look at the singles they release off this are Undercover, She Was Hot, and Too Much Blood. I guess with an eye at the market, although She Was Hot doesn't really speak to whatever was happening in 1983. Maybe the Stray Cats or something, there was a little bit of retro flavor going on, but there wasn't really that comes a little bit later. When was like Jive Bunny in the Mixmasters or whatever? That's like the late 80s where there's this 50s revival thing that happened.
Yeah, that's something we should talk about, but we wrap up the end. Like, what, you know, some, what would be some alternate single choices? But I mean, this was pretty bold. You know, we picked Undercover and Too Much Blood. Those aren't the obvious hits for sure.
There's no tour for Undercover. They don't tour again until Steel Wheels. And Undercover is the only song that they play on that tour from this album. Wanna Hold You is a key song we'll talk about in a little bit. That debuts in 97 on the Bridges to Babylon tour. This doesn't get played live until 2006.
Wow.
Maybe it was just something they always wanted to do and never did. It is in the Shine a Light movie.
Right.
And right around there, I think they start adding it to the set lists. I think this would have been I think this went over really well on the Shine a Light concert. I think there could have been a good spot for it because they do, I think, two or three songs from Dirty Work on the 89 tour. So why this one didn't make the cut, I'm not sure. But if they had done a tour in 83 or 84 to support this, I'm thinking this has got to be one that gets played.
I'm amazed that you know all this. I could never keep track of any of that. That's incredible.
There's things I read and remember, like Rain Man, and just know them. And then there's other things that we probably will say many times here, and they just will not. I'm like, I don't know. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Hard Labor and Money Splashes, the podcast dedicated to the world's greatest rock and roll band, the Rolling Stones. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Email us at hardlabormoneysplashes@gmail.com.